back to Wings Nuts. This is the audio program where we talk about each and every episode of the classic 90s sitcom Wings. And today we are talking about season 3, episode 13, Divorce American Style. Open.
The Mervins. This is the to be continued from last week's episode.
Yes, part two.
Is it Marriage Italian Style?
You see what they did there?
I did. Yes, of course. But back to Mervins. I used to love those commercials. Mervins was my store.
Hey, Mervins was great.
Got all my Hobie and my Ocean Spray.
Ocean Spray? Your juice box is there?
No, wait, was the Ocean?
I know what you're talking about. It was Ocean something.
Ocean Surf?
Ocean something, man.
Yeah.
Had those day-glow colors and the waves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's TNC Surf Design.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Now, what the fuck? This episode was released on what? January 16th, 1992?
That's right.
A couple days before my 12th birthday.
Heyo. Oh, shit. That's right, because you're January 20th. Is that right?
Yeah. So I was probably watching this episode and just fantasizing about my birthday.
What am I going to get? I hope I get a gun.
No, I probably wanted like a tub of those little Macho Men toys.
Oh, hell yeah.
Little figurines of wrestlers.
Those little flesh-colored things.
Yeah, I wanted that or like a Micro Machine or something, you know?
Wow.
But damn, did you catch any of the synopses for this episode?
You know I did. And we have... Actually, I think I might do another double up.
Ooh.
But let's see. We're going to start with the IMDb summary because it was written by our boy... RCS0411@yahoo.com. Helen marries Antonio to keep him from being deported, but she's dreading having to stay married to him for the time required for him to get his citizenship. But Brian learns of another way for Antonio to get his green card, and that is for him to enter the green card lottery. So Helen tries to get as many applications out so that he can get his green card and she can no longer be married to him. That's probably fine, actually. We don't need to read anything else, do we?
that's a good summary, I guess.
Yeah, there's also a B story where Joe finds a matchbook in his jacket pocket.
Yeah.
Brian calls the number, and yeah, you know, another antics ensue.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So good job, RCSSS.
Nice and concise.
Yeah. Now, this episode also has some holdovers from the last one. It was also written by Stephen Levitan, who wrote the part one. He also wrote the late Mrs. Biggins episode.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And he was a writer on, you know, the Larry Sanders Show, Frasier, Men Behaving Badly, and Modern Family.
So I wonder if he likes having those kind of like tender moments. You know, like in the late Mrs. Baggins, we have Roy petting his hamster, talking about how he just couldn't face the fact that she left him. Mm-hmm. And in this one, we have like Antonio in the taxi cab saying like he's never going to like, you know, we'll get to it.
Yeah. So he's got a soft heart, this Stephen Levitan.
Yeah. It seems like he does.
He'd rather be writing Lifetime movies, Hallmark Channel movies, I should say.
Yep.
We have Thomas Ryan returning as Agent Fulham.
Mm-hmm.
Added into the mix is Lisa Howard, who plays Rachel, the aerobics instructor.
Yep.
And she was on Moonstruck. She was on in 285 episodes of The Days of Our Lives. She was on Highlander, the TV Susan. Highlander, the TV series, that is. Mm-hmm. She was on Suddenly Susan. And she was on the Gene Roddenberry show, which wasn't Star Trek. It was called Earth, Final Conflict.
And she was in a very interesting outfit.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that like 80s, that weird 80s spandex fashion where it's like like a bikini over black tights.
Over tights, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Tom McCleister returned as well. He was credited, but I don't think he had any lines this episode.
Which one is he?
He was like the guy. Wasn't he the guy who caught the bouquet?
Is he?
I thought so.
Check
my work there. I might be wrong.
Okay, the one that like Lowell says it wouldn't hurt to get a copy.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think he had a line last episode, but he didn't have a line this episode. But was still credited.
Was he maybe in last episode the one that was like, where do we put those slot buckets?
Yeah. Exactly. A wedding attendee.
Guys? Yeah.
And then also in this episode was a gaping hole where we missed the absence of Susan Tyrell.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. We needed this episode needed Sconset Sal. I'm just going to say.
Oh my God. Big time. Like it would have been awesome to have like, we find out that like the INS agent has run away with Sconset Sal. Oh my God. That would have been.
Yeah. He fucked fantastic. Her too for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she'd rock all of our worlds.
And like, we'll get into the episode, but I'll just say like, it's interesting the choices they made in like, cause that the wedding scene kind of bridged the two episodes, but there was casting differences in it, you know?
Oh, like in the wedding itself?
Well, like you see like Sconset Sal was in at the wedding, but she wasn't in the scenes, at the reception for the wedding. And there was like a bunch of extras that I don't think were in there for the wedding ceremony, but were there at the reception.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, that's also kind of true for weddings.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more of a reception guy.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'll take a reception any day.
An open bar and a chance that someone gets deported. Count me in.
And, we need to mention off the top that this episode was not streaming on Amazon Prime. So, again, if anyone needs a way to watch it, hit us up. We might have a secret method for you to watch it. But any guesses why, Emerson, this might not have been on Amazon Prime?
No, I don't know. Like, you hear the wedding theme, mm-hmm. but you hear that in the previous one too, don't you?
Yeah, the only thing I was thinking is like during the reception with that band playing, maybe they were playing a song that they couldn't quite get the licensing to for streaming. I don't know.
Or like, is it like when Helen's in the bathtub and you see her,
you see everything. Yeah.
Yeah. You see her everything.
You see her areolas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Should we hop into news?
Let's do it.
Pulling from the pages of the Nantucket Inquirer Mirror for our January 16th, 1992. And this is a callback, a little news blurb from Kevin M. Blanchard titled "A Job Well Done." "I'm getting hypothermia. I'm almost dying here." The man's voice on the other end of the phone was broken and shivering, and Nantucket police dispatcher Melinda Burns knew he was in trouble. She kept him talking. The man didn't know exactly where he was. He was in a house near Monomoy. He could see the life-saving museum. He needed help. Burns kept him on the line for more than 5 minutes, asking him to identify landmarks to better help firefighters and police officers find him. Burns' partner, dispatcher Sheila Klinger, relayed the information to rescue units already on the roll. The man is scalloper George Keating, and about 11 a.m. on January 7th, his boat capsized in the harbor. Keating swam 300 yards to shore, broke into a house on the beach, and called the police. Keating is alive today in due part to the good work and quick thinking of Burns and Klinger, says Police Chief Randy Norris. "They did a great job. They kept him on the line and elicited as much information as they could from him." Norris officially commended Burns and Klinger this week for a job well done. Both dispatchers are veterans on the force and receive frequent training on how to handle 911 and other emergency calls. And I liked this because we obviously talked about this last time, and it's a week later, and Kevin Blanchard is still wringing some juice from this lemon. We were a bit confused why he abandoned his boat last time, but I guess they added a few details in this telling of it when the with the boat capsizing. And I like how I like how they chose to kind of highlight the. It's almost like a Rashomon type tale. They're highlighting the other side of it now and talking about the dispatchers and emergency personnel that helped assist.
Like, I'm wondering, because it's obviously, I'm guessing it's a summer person's house.
It sounds like a summer person's, yeah, because there was no one in there. It was an abandoned house.
Which fortunately had a working phone. I wonder if there was furnishings, you know?
Because he stripped down naked.
He did, but I'm wondering if there were just like no sheets or blankets or anything that he could like get his hands on.
Oh, to warm up a little or something?
Yeah.
I think he was just getting like hypothermia, so he was like, not, you know how you don't think straight when you get hypothermia?
I've never gotten hypothermia, but have you experienced that?
No. But I saw that episode of Voyage of the Mimi where the teenager gets hypothermia and gets naked in a sleeping bag with an adult man.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? That Ben Affleck show, Voyage of the Mimi?
Nope. No idea.
Oh, okay. It was one of those shows they roll out. It was a Canadian show. And I had science teachers that would roll out the TV cart and play us episodes of Voyage of the Mimi.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And Ben Affleck was on it as like a teenager.
Interesting. I didn't realize that he was he Canadian?
Yeah, I believe he's Canadian. Wait, I don't know if he's Canadian because his whole thing is like I'm a Bostonian, right?
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, we should know this talking about a Boston area TV show. My friend we were teenagers, and my friend was like house sitting this like empty house. I think the idea was like. He got hired by somebody just to kind of like watch the house before they could like take hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all just went there and like got our hands on beer and cigarettes. And we had like a little TV. We watched Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh.
And we like, I think I slept in like a sleeping bag on the living room floor. And I remember just like how miserable and sparse it was.
Yeah.
Like some I'm like trying to like because if he is in the house that's like unfurnished, lucky for him that there's a telephone.
But if it is furnished, imagine like this fish man's naked body sitting on your couch.
He's right, like
his butt cracks spreading as he settles in and his balls just on the couch cushion there. They probably had to burn that furniture when those summer people came home.
But I bet you they had these articles magneted to the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Chauncey, you're going to get a kick out of this. You know that fisherman that almost died? Get a kick out of this.
Yeah. And
they probably loved it.
Mm-hmm. And Voyage of the Mimi, I did just check. It was actually an American show. It just looked Canadian. It had that Canadian sheen to it.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, my girlfriend's Canadian. She's a Canadian model.
Yeah, you told me about her before.
Oh, yeah. No, yes, the only picture I have of her is like from like a glossy magazine. But what a funny like lie that like was like it must have been originated by some TV show back in the 80s. So silly.
Mm-hmm.
All right, give me that. So I pulled... there's a big old picture of a mill with like the wheel in front of it on page something, Choir Amir still. Mm-hmm. And the little caption says, "The Nantucket Historical Association's old mill was named a national landmark by the American Society of Mechanical Engineers this week. Built in 1746, the mill is still composed of over 80% of its original materials, according to an NHA spokesman. It is believed to be the largest and oldest windmill that is still operational." Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And so, like, it looks like a mill. Is it, like, wind operated? You have a windmill, right?
They got the ones that are, like, in the water, too. Like, little water turbines, too.
This one looks like it's maybe both.
Yeah, I've seen that, too.
Yeah. Because, like, the whole point of it is that it's doing work inside. I guess Is the whole point of it that it's turning something inside the mill itself that's like grinding down grain?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Cool. And yeah, we talked about, you talked previously about a historic lighthouse. And so we're reminded that Nantucket is just this island of history.
It is. And it's like, also, I love that fact that it's composed of 80% of its original materials, which is also like, that's what's that that old thought exercise where it's like, when do you stop being who you are, you know?
Like, your cells regenerate every like 7 years or something.
Yeah. And there's like a ship, like they use a ship as an example where they talk about how like, you know, like once they replace the mast and then the sails and then they replace, you know, and so at that point, does it continue being? And I'm of the mind that it does continue to be like the same, if it still serves the same purpose and it's still kind of like maintains the same identity. But yeah, that's always an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the same time, if someone was to clone me and my point of consciousness no longer existed within that clone, I personally wouldn't feel like that was me. But you know, in other arguments, it could potentially continue to be me. So
yeah. And jumping from the past to the future,
give me that. All right.
Headline: 6 local libraries may be linked by computer, by Mary Lancaster. Imagine walking into any of the island's libraries, pressing a computer key.
Can we have you take that again, but a little bit more, Shatner?
Imagine walking into any of the island's libraries, pressing a computer key, and having a display of all available books appear on the screen. By the fall of next year, that service may become a reality if a grant is awarded that would fund a computer link between each of the town's 6 libraries. The idea has been a topic of discussion among the island's librarians since last fall, said Nantucket Historical Association research librarian Amy Rokicki.
We're trying to give people the best access possible to resources, she said.
Last fall, the librarians began inviting speakers to explain how the system works, including a representative from the Cape Library Automated Materials Sharing, CLANS, computer network that connects 20 different Cape libraries. How about that? CLANS as like a, okay. And then Rokicki said there is federal grant money available through the Library Commission to connect multi-type libraries such as those on Nantucket. The funds would be awarded in June 1993. Meyer told the group that the town is the first with 5 different types of libraries that wishes to make a computer link.
We're on the cutting edge. That's exciting, said Rokicki.
The system would allow patrons to go to any of the island's libraries and call up book displays by author or subject, just as the Dewey Decimal System card catalog does, but it would offer additional services. The computers would also indicate which library has the requested book, whether it is on loan, and when it is scheduled for return. The librarians are considering including the CLANS network in its link, said Rokicki. That would give islanders improved access to interlibrary borrowing program and let Cape patrons see what volumes are in the Nantucket collection. This would especially benefit researchers who might be interested in the rare materials, including the Athenaeum, Mary Mitchell, and Historical Association inventories, said Rokicki. The librarians will continue to discuss the computer network system, considering advice from the commission to determine which one would best serve the island. They're also looking into hooking up with the existing automated library equipment at the high school. By October this year, they intend to submit a grant proposal for the system of choice, she said.
The important thing for the community to know is that there's energy here to put something together to improve library services, said Rokicki.
Now, how about that? I love these articles that really put us back and make us realize how far we've come on, like, because, like, imagine being excited by a library system where you can call up the catalogs of different libraries.
I love it. That's badass.
It just feels like we always had that, you know?
Yeah, I just used that this past week. I borrowed a book from the library called Tokyo Murder Vice.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like a true crime book, but like I wanted to read it and I had to like went on the library system and searched. I love it. Like it's a direct descendant of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and like I did the very same thing. Went to the library this weekend and we checked out The Wizard of Oz. And you know, I looked that up on a library catalog search system that linked all the local libraries together.
Yeah.
And I took it completely for granted. It wasn't novel to me. And mm-hmm. I was not excited about the process.
You know what's wild? Because like, are you Generation X or are you Generation kind of like Xennial? Is that where we kind of fall?
I don't even know. I always forget.
There's like always like different arguments. But I do know that like you and I both fall into that kind of category of like people who grew up without the internet and kind of like were introduced to it in the course of their lifetimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is fascinating thinking about all the things that I put so much effort into like learning and being good at that don't fucking matter at all.
I know.
Like at one point I learned how to like very concisely use the Dewey Decimal System.
Yes.
Where I could like go to the library and like look at those little, I love like the tiny wooden pull-out door drawers.
With the cards and
the
stuff.
The cards. Yeah. So I could go and like find like the number range and pull that out and find the book I was looking for and would have like the shelf number and location. Loved that. Does not fucking matter at all.
Doesn't exist. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I bet we both took typing classes. We both probably spent like 5 years copying cursive.
Yes.
Lettering. Yeah, like, and like, it's like it was a totally different world. And for like the first 10 years I used a computer, I thought it was just an Oregon Trail machine.
I thought it was just a Terry Hatcher naked machine. You know what? Actually, though, that's an indication of like growing up like in a poorish family, like where mm-hmm. we didn't really have like an actual computer. We had this Texas Instruments kind of keyboard looking device that would plug into the TV.
Yes.
And it had very basic, what's that like kind of?
It's like a word processor.
Yeah. Is it MS-DOS where you do like the 10, go to 20, et cetera?
That kind of
really basic programming.
Yeah.
And so I like did learn, like they even, when I was in sixth grade, they bused us from like my school to a separate school. And they would teach us like very like basic programming where at the end of it, the screen is displaying your first name diagonally. Like, but I don't know. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
Give me that. This is the Boston Globe. This is under recordings. Tribe Called Quest, the Low End Theory Jive. Ooh. This rap group's first record was an inventive and very influential pastiche of words and music. The following is somewhat less ambitious but still satisfying. There's plenty of loose, jazzy jams here created from deft mixing of flexible beats, becoming bass, booming bass, live instrumentation, and sly samples. Bassist Ron Carter makes an appearance laying down some elastic lines on Verses from the Abstract. Rapper Q-Tip leads the charge with his nasal delivery and clever, often eccentric rhyme schemes. He's extra sharp on the comic What and adds to the funked up show business SS, which slings arrows at slack MCs, record bootleggers, and industry schmoozers. There are two major clunkers, the infamous Date Rape, which sends out mixed signals, and Butter, where they try to cloak misogyny in a jokey narrative. Both leave a bitter taste. Otherwise, this is a dynamic disc that builds on its predecessor's success.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good album.
You'll never hear records like that again for the first time.
I mean, maybe like some Kendrick Lamar stuff is pretty incredible.
You have classic records and you can only hear them for the first time once, you know? It goes for like all music.
I was like, what's the one that has the thing? No, Low End Theory is like probably my favorite Tribe Called Quest album. Mm-hmm. That's Because it's got doop 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 doop. Back in the days when I was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a page, you could find the abstract. I listened to hip hop. It's such a fucking great album. Holy shit. Do you know what the bands Korn and Q-Tip have in common?
Let me think about that. Adidas?
Ooh, maybe.
Okay, what? What were you thinking of?
Their lead singers are both named Jonathan Davis.
Oh, is that no shit? That's wild.
Q-Tip's real name is Jonathan Davis.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and you know what? What Carrot Top and the Kids in the Hall have in common?
They're both named Dave Thomas. They both have a Dave Thomas in them.
It's Scott Thompson.
Scott Thompson.
Yeah, Carrot Top's real name is Scott Thompson.
Oh, damn. I was thinking of Wendy's and Kids in the Hall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. SCTV.
Yeah. Give me that. Question. What do you do to survive island fever?
Ooh, so we're still in the Nantucket Admirer choir.
Yeah, the Nantucket Admirer. Yeah.
Ooh, I am a Nantucket Admirer whenever I watch that show.
And I don't know if you want to trade off on this. This is their person on the street.
Sure. Yeah. Questions. Let me just give me a second. That's page 3.
Yeah. So we all know what island fever is, obviously. And the question posited today is, what do you do to survive island fever? Peter Samard is a bartender, and he's got an idea.
I bartend at the Harbor House. A lot of reading and a fair amount of writing. And right now I'm looking at doing some investing. I think about skiing a lot. And that's pretty much it.
Got it. Okay. Diane Hartland, a Garden Center employee. She says, I keep involved in the theater. I'm directing a play that's going on in April. I do a lot of artwork. I'm working on some stained glass this winter. I keep my dog happy by taking her for long walks. Ooh. I think about Peter Samard, the bartender at the Harbor House, a lot.
Oh, wow.
And hey, that's pretty much it.
Then we have Ira Rose, the attorney.
Oh, my God. Do you mean like the video game hero?
Wait, is there a video game character named Ira Rose?
No, but do you see the fucking picture of this guy?
Yeah, yeah.
He looks like he'd be like the main character in
Vice, like a Grand Theft Auto or something.
No, I was gonna say like that works, but I was gonna say like what's the Solid Snake video games?
Solid Snake Gear?
Metal Gear Solid.
I don't know a lot of video games, man.
I don't know that guy. He looks intense. He looks like an action star.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Even in it's hard to make out the details in this bad copies of badly printed newspapers from 30 years ago. But yeah.
Yeah.
Or like incredible. Max Payne, maybe. That's a game, right?
Yes. Yes. Oh, he looks like a Mickey Rourke character.
Yes. Yeah. But he's actually an attorney. And Ira Rose has to say,
try to catch up on my reading that I don't have time to do in the summer months. I also do a lot of maintenance on my fishing gear. Actually, there's a lot of work during winter, so I manage to keep busy.
I'm going to go to my next favorite, which is Ken Dicker, delivery driver. Work, and my boss has several side projects to keep me busy. Family keeps me busy. We rent movies. No one thing in particular. A lot of it is family time spent together. Also, I like hanging out over at the Harbor House with my buddy Peter Samard. I think about him. I think about him a lot.
That's pretty much it. Okay. Then we have Marsha Limparis. She's a gallery manager. In the gallery business, there's always something to do. I keep busy puttering around, and there's my husband. I help organize him at the knobby shop. There's always something to do. There's always the laundry and the cooking and the puttering and the husband and the knobby shop.
Wow. And then finally, we have Michael J. Fox. Gary Collier, artist who looks a lot like Michael J. Fox. Mm-hmm. To
my eyes, he looks like Pauly Shore a little bit, too.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I have trouble surviving the summer. Right now, I'm doing scrimshaw. It's a lot of fun. Actually, I don't feel that much of a need to be entertained. I'm kind of a quiet person, just hanging out with my buddies Peter and Ken Decker over at the Harbor House, you know. Sometimes we'll go visit Diane Hartland at the Garden Center employee. And, you know, like sometimes if we want to kick some ass, hit up Ira Rose Attorney. But I'm sorry, listeners. I'm trying to like paint a whole intricate connected circle.
Well, but Gary doesn't get along with Marcia because she refuses to put on that gallery show for him.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. But what is scrimshaw?
I don't know. I know it as like a beer.
Okay.
Or is scrimshaw like a boating term?
That sounds right.
I think it might be.
Well, Gary thinks it's fun, whatever it is.
Okay. Names and faces. Let's see. What are we looking at here? Late bloomers. Guns N' Roses is known for late shows, but the rock group's performance at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio was too late for some fans. The group didn't start its Monday night concert until 12:25 a.m. Tuesday, the show ended at 3:05 a.m. There was no way that I was going to wait for Guns N' Roses to come out, said Cindy Whiting of Troy, who left at midnight because she had to be at work at 7 a.m. Running till midnight would be one thing. Not coming out until 12:45 or 1 a.m. is another. One time I saw MF Doom play at the Fonda, you know, here in L.A.
Yeah.
And my friend Angel and I think I've told this story before. I might have.
Yeah, but you've brought up Angel. I don't remember the MF Doom story, though.
Yeah, so we saw MF Doom. I was, like, obsessed with Mad Villainy, that album. Mm-hmm. Incredible album. Still stand by it. It's like such a great album.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the venue like around 11-ish maybe, thinking like we'd be fashionably late, we'd miss the opening bands and get there right in time to see MF Doom. We get there, there's like a DJ, there's like some Quasimodo stuff going on. I don't know if Madlib was there or what was happening, but there were breakdancers on stage off and on, and we like ended up going out to like the outside patio area and kind of just like finding like a place to sit and talk and wait, and he didn't go on until 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was a weeknight. It was like a school night. So like the first like 3 or 4 songs he did was like Mad Villainy's first 3 or 4 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were just like, all right, we're okay. We're going to go.
It could be rough some shows that when they're late like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard you recently went to a Adam Sandler show, which stretched into the wee hours of the night as well.
It's for like an upcoming special on the recording, like 7 nights. But the tickets for the show I went to were 8:30 p.m. We like got in line around 7:45 p.m. We didn't get into the theater until like after 10 p.m. He didn't come out until like 10:30, 10:45. And like, yeah, my buddy and I didn't leave until 1 in the morning. I was so tired. But he was great. He was a really, really, really funny show. And when it gets released on Netflix, definitely check it out. I'm sure you will not see me because our show was like full of like audiovisual fuck-ups.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And also there was like, he like at one point he like, asked somebody in the audience like, "What's going on?" And there was like people kind of fight, like not physically fighting, but like you know, people being. I guess one woman said that people were being obnoxious, and then they were being like, "We're just laughing." But I don't know. I think they were probably talking because people around my buddy and I were also talking a lot, and it was like kind of annoying. I think there were a lot of drunk people, and also like when you have to wait that long for the show to start, you start to like kind of lose your mind. So,
yeah. Give me that.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff in this issue had like a lot of echoes to me from modern times. Like not, nothing I want to highlight but too much, but like, so you had a lot of business with like, it's election season this time too. So there was a lot of articles about Bush and Clinton on the election trail.
And you're back in the Boston Globe now, right?
Yeah, I'm in the Boston Globe now. And there was also like a Boston local police brutality kind of controversy. So they had articles about community policing. And it's just one of these, this issue was particularly illustrative of like how kind of history echoes a lot of things. But what I would highlight is kind of like some of the news in out of the Middle East. So because you also, like we touched on last week, you have these Mideast peace conferences happening and the different political brinksmanship arising out of that. But I have a little news item here from the Associated Press titled West Bank Settlers Defy Troops. Israel occupied West Bank. Jewish settlers defied soldiers yesterday and towed mobile homes to five would-be settlement sites to protest the Middle East peace talks and the ambush of an Israeli bus. In addition, a far-right political party announced that it was pulling out of Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir's ruling coalition to protest the peace talks in Washington. This brought the government close to collapse. A second right-wing party is expected to do the same today. The settlers tried to set up two new Jewish enclaves and expand three others. So interesting people protesting peace talks. And, you know, so much of like the settler movement, just thinking about how that historically leads to where we are today.
Yep. Yeah. It's really, really fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, give me that. Give me that. Well, I'm filled with the names and faces, and I didn't catch this previously, but holy shit, Jared. Monkey business. you saw this one too?
Oh, yeah.
Jiro, a 6-year-old Japanese monkey who has reached stardom through his antics, imitates President George Bush's collapse at the dinner table for fun and profit. During a performance Tuesday at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Japan, trainer Taro Murasaki put Jiro through his zanning paces. When Murasaki says, "Bush-san, Bush-san," Jiro keels over. There they go again, making monkeys out of Americans. And there's a picture of like the trainer holding like holding the monkey's hair back a little bit.
Yeah.
And it says, after his trainer, Taro Murasaki, left, calls Bushan Bushan, Jiro does an imitation of President George Bush's collapse during a performance at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Japan in Tokyo Tuesday.
Wow.
That is wild.
Does Jiro the monkey by any chance dream of sushi?
He probably does.
Wasn't there another monkey item in there as well?
Yeah, more monkey business. I haven't read this one, but I'll just go for it. Call it sour bananas, but all that hoopla over the 40th anniversary of today has left J. Fred Muggs feeling more than a little slighted. The anchor chimp wasn't even invited to Tuesday's primetime reunion show. It's a snub, sniffed Buddy Manella, co-owner of the chimp. J. Fred has never gotten his due. He helped make that show what it is. Now he's just forgotten. NBC spokeswoman Genevieve Woods said the chimp simply had too much star presence. With his size now, I'm not sure it would be practical to have him here in person, she said. Muggs, who turns 40 this year, weighs in 175 pounds, hardly the 13-pound diapered cutie he was when he aped around with original Today host Dave Garraway in 1953. That's wild.
Yeah.
And I will say... you know, from experience, it doesn't hurt rubbing bananas on those envelopes.
And speaking of monkeys that impersonate American presidents, have you seen those recent clips out of Italy with a Italian comedian doing his Biden impression?
I have not. No,
they're pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay, nice.
Give me that.
I got one more item here. Yes. Pol finds support for a raid on Iraq if nuclear threat exists. 2/3 of Americans surveyed in a poll taken 2 weeks ago said the United States should strike Iraq militarily if it continues to develop nuclear weapons. And 2/3, or 67% of those surveyed, said the United States should have continued fighting to force Saddam Hussein from power. Just as in an AP-sponsored poll 6 months ago, less than 1/4 of Americans agree with Bush's decision to stop short of overthrowing the Iraqi president. And I always like news items that have to do with like manufacturing consent and has how like the media wags the tail of, you know, the war powers. But I also like just this just got me thinking about how like I feel like one thing that has changed in recent times is I do remember when I was young, there was almost like a bloodlust the average American you talk to had for like military intervention in foreign places. And I think that still happens a lot, particularly with like the way people talk about Russia and China, but like other conflicts like in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like I feel like the last couple decades, people have been less, war has been less popular than it once was.
Mm-hmm.
It's just 100%. A surprise to, you know, to hear that. A surprise and also kind of sickening to hear that 2/3 of Americans thought we should have been up in Iraq.
Right, right. But it's like 2/3 of quote unquote 2/3 of Americans, where it's like probably a skewed survey based on something.
That
probably doesn't quite, that, you know, like presents it in a way where it's like, well, yeah, of course we should, you know, get rid of that threat.
What are these polls anyways? No one ever asked me about nothing. I've never been polled.
Well, we're talking about, again, season 3, episode 12, 13,
mm-hmm.
Divorce American Style. And so are we going to call this the cold open?
Yeah, the cold open. It, just a recap of last week's episode, right?
Oh, no, not that. Like, I feel like that initial scene before we cut to like a B shot, that B roll. I think that might be a cold open.
The one where Helen's like depressed sitting at the table.
Well, should we just call that the cold open?
Yeah, because it is like a little, little minute, scene.
Yeah.
And then it kind of fades to black and then comes back.
Yeah, it does the fade to black. It does like a little like establishing shot outside, and mm-hmm. then it kind of continues with the same scene.
Yeah.
So like it violates some of the terms of a cold open, but I think it's supposed to act as one.
Yes. Yeah.
So basically what happens is Helen sitting depressed by herself, like wearing that oversized dress. Joe comes over and he says, "Hey, Helen, this is supposed to be your wedding day. If you and Antonio want to fuel that immigration agent, you should at least try to smile a bit." I love like Helen's face here.
Mm-hmm.
When she does that little kind of growl, like the very, very good. He goes, "Helen, come on, things could be a lot worse." Roy comes over, "Buck her up, toots. I'm here to kiss the bride." And then Joe goes see, and we do that quick fade.
Yeah.
So if we're going to treat it as a cold open, I mean, God, if this was like a more cut and dry cold open, I would mm-hmm. really like this.
Yeah.
But like, I think the way that it kind of like sits, it feels like, I don't know, like when they give you your appetizer, like while you're already eating your dinner.
It is part of the DNA of the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really like, it's not what I want a cold open to be, where it's like a standalone little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it also serves to kind of like catch you. It comes off of the heels of the recap. So it also serves to kind of like catch you up with what happened last week. So I don't think it's functionally a cold open, but I don't think it is philosophically a cold open.
It feels like it's being presented as a cold open, but it doesn't mm-hmm. quite feel like a cold open.
And with the show completely dropping the opening credit sequence, you don't have that demarcation either. So it just kind of feels confusing to me.
You know what would have maybe worked better as a cold open is like something with Lola and the Fisherman.
Yeah. Or something with Sconce at Sal. That'll always work for me.
Oh my God. Yes. 100%. Mm-hmm. So I can we even rate it as a cold open? Like, should we
let's
just
do give, it. Let's rate it. Yeah.
I'm going to give it like 3. Two and a half.
I'm going to give it 2 stripes.
I really like Helen's face. I think Helen is like doing a lot of work on this episode in general. Mm-hmm. Like, she's really, really good. I laughed really hard when she did that face.
Yeah. And she does a face at the end of the episode too. That made me laugh. So she kind of bookends this episode by pulling faces.
Yeah. And like, this episode actually had a lot of like laugh out louds for me, which mm-hmm. like a lot of sitcoms don't make me actually like laugh out loud. Then I'll just kind of like be like, I'm enjoying this in my
head.
Yeah,
you get the, oh, that's funny. You know, yes. You might say that instead of laughing.
So anyway, yeah, I think that works. 2.5 and 2.
And then they go jump to B-roll. Then they're back into the scene with the big blocky titles on the lower thirds there.
I hope that might just be something for this 2-part mm-hmm. episode, but I'm worried that it's going to continue on.
Yes, me too. And it's we're in the hangar still, and we're in the kind of reception for the wedding, right? There's music mm-hmm. and dancing. And the first thing I said is, who the fuck is that guy dancing with Helen? He kind of looked like a cross between Harry Shearer and Martin Short.
He almost looked like a guy that should be like playing the banjo in yes. Deliverance.
Yeah. And we mentioned this earlier, but like I was watching the background this whole scene because some of the extras were great. And
oh
like,
my God. Like the extras almost like deserve like a secondary VIP all on their own.
Yeah.
The fisherman dancing by himself.
Yeah.
I love that.
And there was a really wacky dancing couple.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know, it was just kind of madness in the background sometimes.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But we started off with like Lowell chatting with the agent.
Yes.
I feel like you probably would have liked this, like because Lil asks him about like tracking down illegal aliens, mm-hmm. and he says like, "Have you been to their mothership?"
Yes, yeah, that was great.
Yes, Joe discovers a woman's number in his coat on like on a matchbook.
Mm-hmm. It's the name Rachel on a club car matchbook.
Yeah, and so when Joe goes to throw it away, Brian's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Hey, what are you doing, Joe? You never throw out a Rachel." Throw out a Mildred, throw out an Ethel, but never a Rachel. Rachel is a biblical name. You call a Rachel, you might see God. She looks like the last girl you set me up with. I might see Roy.
There's some good horny Brian in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Throw out a Mildred, throw out an Ethel, but never a Rachel. Rachel's a biblical name, yeah.
And Roy's having tons of fun.
I love this joke. I'll set you up for it. Mm-hmm. I can get Helen to do anything. Here, watch this. Attention, please. I think someone's still wearing a garter. And then Brian, you don't have to make an announcement, Roy. Just go to the men's room and take it off.
Yes. That's great.
Yes.
And then Super Faye funny. helps rally everyone to like get Helen to throw her garter.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen she's none too pleased about it.
Right. And like Tony Shalhoub's playing it really well, like being kind of awkward and shy about like, you know, like not wanting to violate her space. Although obviously later that gets out the window.
Yes,
that goes out the window with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. but yeah, he goes to like, you know, pull her garter off, and then Helen just like yanks it off and throws it.
Yeah. Now, being a leg guy, Emerson, how did you feel about this scenario?
Hachi machi.
Yeah, were you a little titillated there like Roy?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good looking leg. Yeah. Not bad.
I had a lot of anxiety in parts of this episode with how loudly people were talking about immigration being there.
Uh-huh.
It's like this group is not being cool with it at all. Like they keep, hey, we got to keep up appearances. Immigration's here.
Yeah.
It's like, can you be a little quieter about that?
Yeah, I know, right? Like that always drives me a little bit nuts in like any kind of like entertainment like this, where it's clear that like these characters are talking about something that the other character cannot hear, but I'm always like, but they can probably hear. I don't know.
Yeah, he's like 5 feet behind you there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, when Helen throws that garter though, Lowell caught it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's excited because he finally has something frilly that he can keep his pants leg from getting caught in his bicycle chain.
Like the immigration agent comes over and corners Helen. Mrs. Scarpot, she just wanted to thank you for today. Oh, well, just so glad you could join us by. And, you know, he informs her that, mm-hmm. like, it's not the last they'll be seeing of him because he's got to come up and do follow-up interviews to, like, you know, verify that the wedding is not a fraud, basically.
Yeah.
He basically like throws out the idea that they could get sent to prison if mm-hmm. he can prove that it is fraud. The fraud in the government is a federal crime, all that stuff. And I liked his suit turning joke.
Yes, this might have been like my favorite joke of the episode, actually.
Defrauding the government is a federal crime. Anyway, I hope you like the soup tureen I gave you. Oh. Don't ask me why I thought it was appropriate. It serves 7 to 10.
I just thought that was great. So clever.
And me too.
The actor, his deliveries continues to be excellent.
And he's a little stinker.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I did wonder to myself how many times he's used that joke though, but it's still good.
The character.
Yeah. I imagine he's gone to wedding scenarios like this before, and always he probably has like 20 soup tureens in the trunk of his car.
Yeah. He's like trying to flirt with the girl at the hotel bar, and he's like, and then I gave her a soup tureen and here's what I said. Yeah, and then Helen basically like is telling Faye like she didn't realize that there could be prison time involved, and so she's like, I need to go home and take a bath. And she's still holding the bouquet. And then Faye's like, you need to throw the flowers. And mm-hmm. so on the way out, as she storms out, you see the flowers fly back into the room, and it's caught by the big fisherman guy.
Yeah. And he's like standing next to Lowell.
And the two, like look at each other. And Lowell goes, I suppose it wouldn't hurt to have coffee.
Yeah, I really appreciated that from Lowell.
Me too. Yeah.
Because he's been like, at some points, he's been like, seemed like almost a little bigoted minded and a little bit like, you know, had like some hang ups about sexuality and stuff. And so I thought it was cool of him to be so open minded.
Yeah.
And explore the potential romance with this large man.
Yeah. I think Lowell has some really, really great moments throughout this episode. Like, I think in like 3 or 4 different scenes, Lowell has like maybe the funniest moments.
I agree. Yeah.
And Roy's really funny, but Roy feels kind of muted. I think maybe just in terms of like of the A line.
Mm-hmm.
Because the A storyline is going to be like basically Helen and Antonio dealing with the marriage and the threat of like jail time now.
Yes.
The B storyline, I think, is like Joe finding the phone number in his jacket pocket.
Ooh.
What do you think the B storyline is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to jump to that scene now, actually.
Ooh.
I actually took better notes this time than I have in the last 4 or 5 episodes.
Oh, nice. Because mine are worse.
So okay. Hey, they balance each other out, right?
Yeah.
Another reference to a line coming up later. All mm-hmm. right. So we're in Joe's office. And basically the wedding's dying down. Joe's putting away the oversized wedding dress and says something about like having a new, what does he say?
Like tarpon, like a tarp.
For the airplane.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he just like drops Antonio's mother's dress on the floor, I guess.
I guess so. I mean, I don't even know why he is in possession of it.
I know. Yeah. Cause Helen ran out. I guess she ran to Joe's office, changed, and then ran out in her normal clothes, maybe?
No, she got naked.
She ran out naked.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to be taking a bath anyways. Might as well run home naked.
Okay.
I thought that was rude, like dropping the dress on the floor.
It was, yeah, but like, yeah, they should be giving it to Antonio because this is a family heirloom, even though.
I don't, like, yeah, his mom held on to it for some reason, and, you know.
Does your family have anything? Because you have a brother, right? You don't have any sisters?
Got a couple brothers, yeah.
You have a couple brothers, okay.
Yeah.
Like, does your mom's wedding dress still exist?
No, I don't think so.
I don't even know if my mom had a wedding dress because her and my dad like went to Las Vegas and to the big old honka honka burn. Yeah. You know.
Similarly, my parents got married in Tahoe, I believe. And my mom was very pregnant, so I don't think I don't think she had like your traditional dress.
Are you oldest?
I'm the oldest of my mother's child. I have an older stepbrother though.
Okay, I'm the oldest of my mom's kids as well, but I have an older half-brother.
I love that for us.
Oh, yeah, totally. And also, my mom was definitely pregnant with me when she when they got... I mean, I don't think it was a shotgun scenario. They just were like, let's just... whatever.
And we're both Aquarii, too.
We are, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so Joe's, like, you know, ready to, like, call it a night, and Brian goes, not so fast, and he's got the matchbook with the phone number on it.
Mm-hmm.
He dials it, and like I think there's like a little bit of like back and forth, but Brian's like, just listen to her voice.
Yeah
And she is like the epitome of like that like breathy like 80s sexy voice.
Like a deep kind of sensual talk. Yeah, and they put her on speakerphone, right?
Yeah, so. And her opening line. Well, should we just both take a try at it? We'll see who.
Yeah, go for it.
Hello, Rachel.
Yes,
my name is Joe Hackett, and
could you hold on for just a second, please? I just finished working out, and you got me out of the shower, so I'm standing here stark naked and dripping wet.
And then, yeah, they press the hold button, and then Joe and Brian.
Ooh.
Do you want to give it a go?
Oh, can you hold on for a minute, please? You just caught me after my workout. And I just got out of the shower, so I'm standing here, stark naked, dripping wet.
Ooh. Ooh. And we hear Brian and Joe getting erections.
Hello?
My name is Joe Hackett.
Could you hold on for just a second, please? I just finished working out, and you got me out of the shower, so I'm standing here, stark naked and dripping wet.
Ooh.
To me, it's like a little bit on the nose when she says it was a dry shower, and she's like, "I'm only dripping wet between my legs."
Yeah, what?
Apologies to all of our listeners. I promise that I wouldn't make jokes like that. Just kidding.
And I like Brian's line. Usually, you have to pay $3 a minute for a call like that.
Yes. And so, yeah, they have a conversation. Yeah, like Joe wants to tell her that, like, he's like telling her, I know this sounds crazy, but I found your number and I don't remember who you are. And Brian's trying to stop him and be like, nothing turns a woman off more than telling her you don't remember her. I mean, it's right up there with, my, you have stout, muscular legs.
And so Joe like then, yeah. wants to, she wants to meet up with Joe to talk about it, right?
Yes. Yeah, because like he finally, she's like, maybe we met at the gym. Did we talk after an aerobics class? You take an aerobics. I'm an instructor. And then, yeah, he's like, not at the gym. Then when he says that it was at the club car, she has an idea of who it might be.
Yeah.
Are you about 6 feet tall with brown hair? yeah, I remember you, but you don't remember me at all? Well, and then, yeah, they they make plans to get together, solve the little mystery. I like Joe posturing.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm a pilot. Yeah.
He's like, I own it. Yeah. And then her line, too, is so funny. Terrific. I'll come by the airport. Let's see. I've got a thigh class at 11 and a butt class at 1. How about if I squeeze you in between?
And they're groaning through these like pained smiles. I love it.
Yeah. It's like crazy that they keep on like facing each other and like getting yes. together.
And
you know, like leaning their hips in toward each other. And you see like Lowell peeking in through the blinds.
This is two horny brothers horning over a phone call.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
And when they think she's hung up, they kind of start celebrating.
Yeah, is she hot or what? And boy, does she sound built. Yeah.
I love that. Boy, does she sound built. And like the next line from Brian, I didn't quite understand it, but I thought it was hilarious nonetheless. She's got to have a set of gat gums on her that would bring down a space shuttle. He said something like that. I'm like, what, gat gums? I listened to it 3 or 4 times. I didn't know what he was talking about.
Okay. Because I have the transcript. It says she has got a set of ack guns on her that could bring down the space shuttle. And when I Google ack guns, they are anti-aircraft warfare.
Okay.
So they're like... I'm assuming it means she's got big old tail.
Okay, is that what she's talking about?
Yeah, because it looks like AK-ACs are like anti-aircraft guns that like fire into the
air.
Okay,
okay.
And so if hers can take down a space shuttle, then that means that the space shuttle is probably still like in the atmosphere. Then it could probably shoot into outer space because
they're big. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. But then...
I guess so.
Reveal... Rachel was still on the line and she heard everything.
Yeah. Excuse me. Can I clear this up for you? 36, 24, 36. And only if I'm 5'3". That's the Sir Mix-a-Lot line. I also love her line. Now, would you please hang up so I can use this line? Does she not have like the ability to hang up her own phone?
I guess the lines were still engaged with one another until the other party hung up. Did phones used to work like that?
Not in like 1992. Yeah,
no.
In 1992, if you hung up the phone, it would hang up the phone. It wasn't like you were still connected. But maybe Nantucket had an outdated phone line.
Yeah, they had a intermediary, a woman sitting in a room with a lot of wires plugging them in from one to the other.
Barbara, put me through to Achilles heel 314.
Plug, 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 plug.
But I love like, yeah, after that whole thing where they like have like their embarrassed moment. Sorry, hang up. And then.
Oh.
Is it rude to say, is she really 36, 24, 36 when we see her later?
I don't know a lot about. I've never been a seamstress or anything, but probably not,
I guess. That's true. Yeah. I mean, she's a very beautiful woman. So.
And that's like a thing that happened a lot in the 80s and 90s, I feel, where like characters would just like prattle off women's measurements. I don't think I hear that as much nowadays.
I remember hearing about it from like, in terms of like Renaissance art, where it was like based on these like old oil paintings of like naked women having a picnic.
Yes.
And they were like the ideal woman's body in terms artistically. I don't think there's any fucking truth to that. But it was something like 36, 24, 36. And I learned that probably around 1992. So... that might have just been like kind of a common sort of like measurement that was being thrown around at the time.
Agreed.
But I think all women are beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, especially my mom. Love you, mom. You know, keep on doing what you're doing.
And speaking about naked women laying around, we jump into the next scene when Helen is
taking
a bath.
taking a bath. Her hair is still up. She's got a lot of makeup
yes,
on.
And ample amount of
and
bubbles
she's
in
covered
that tub.
In, yeah, she's covered
so
in
so
bubbles.
Many bubbles in the tub.
I always wonder how they do that. Like, is it a dry tub with just bubbles, maybe?
That could be, yeah. That's
doable, right? There's probably like bubble machines you can because like they have foam parties.
For sure. And like whenever I put bubble bath in the bath, you don't maintain that level of bubbleage like that.
Yeah.
It popped
pretty
quick.
A slimy film on the surface of the bath water.
Yeah.
I haven't taken a bath in like 20 years.
Yeah,
maybe.
I haven't either, but I do have a young child who fancies a bubble bath. So
of course, yeah. Having kids, like all of my friends and family that have kids, you know, are back in the bath.
Yeah.
It's fun going over there and like seeing their bathtubs full of like toys and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that though, because like I'm thinking about it. I used to take baths. I would like appreciate a bath, even like read a book or something in the bath. But I can kind of like figure out the last time I took a bath, just thinking about where I lived at the time. And I think like my last like 10 domiciles, I did not take a bath in.
I did not take a bath. I haven't taken a bath here, and I should because I have like a jacuzzi jet bath.
Oh my God, you got to. Yeah.
I know. I should probably take advantage of that. And I don't think I took a bath in Glendale either. I think the last bath I might have taken might have been Atwater.
Yeah, the last bath I took was Mountain View, and that was like decades ago.
Interesting.
But I want to come over to your place and take a bath.
I mean, as long as you're willing to like scrub it afterward. Cause that's the thing. I had a roommate, my roommate had a girlfriend and his girlfriend had a dog,
oh, no.
Right? First of all, the dog would fucking shit on the living room and they would be like, oh, sorry. But like sometimes they wouldn't do anything about it for hours. Cause like they were holed up in their bedroom. And that was fucking annoying because, like, that's not a pleasant smell. You gotta, like, don't bring your fucking untrained dog over, please. But also, they would give their dog baths in the like, communal bathtub shower thing. And that, too, like, you're just fucking, you're cat in the hatting it.
It's no good.
That there's that pink slime, you know?
Yeah, that's rough.
You probably read Cat on the Hat recently, right?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, because isn't that like a big part of the deal where it's like there's like a pink bath slime that keeps kind of getting like transitioned to other parts of the house?
I don't remember that part at all. I think that's a different Dr. Seuss. Cat in the Hat, that cat just comes over and wrecks the house, though. But then he cleans it up. But I don't remember the pink slime. But there very well could be.
Oh, maybe it's the Cat in the Hat comes back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't read that one.
Okay. Yeah, there must have been like a book that I read. I recognize that cover for sure. Okay. Interesting.
Cat in the Hat came back. Okay. The sequel.
Yeah. So in that one, yeah, the cat's in the house. He got a snow. Yeah. Like I think the cat takes a bath and leaves. A long pink cat ring has formed around the sides of the bathtub. I'll
say this. I have not, will not read that book. I could not, would not take a look. The first book is just fine for me. I do not need Cat in the Hat 2 or 3.
If you could make a better rhyme, then talk about that pink bath slime. Ooh. Yeah. Speaking of ooh. We're here. Helen's in the bathtub. She's like, she looks honestly like pretty relaxed.
Uh-huh.
You know, like after like that fucking shitty day. And then Antonio barges
in.
And this felt like a pretty bad violation of people's
privacy. Yeah.
Like that's not.
Yeah. He comes in with like a meal, right? He's bringing her a veal scallopini.
Yes. Yep.
The most al dente scallopini. So uncooked scallopini, basically.
Also, weird line. She goes, get out of my bathroom. It is okay. I am not seeing anything. But if I were, may I be permitted to say, wow.
I know. Yeah. So we're seeing glimpses of Antonio kind of being horny for Helen.
A little bit of a PC violation.
Yeah. I think he's crossing boundaries now, I think, now that they've crossed the threshold.
Yeah.
And this comes up, ties in later thematically. So, but we do see Antonio trying to kind of make it happen with this relationship.
Hey, Jared.
Hey, Emerson.
Dude, that beat back. Brian's Time Report. I forgot about this because, like, we're seeing some great fashion from scene one.
Yeah, he's still got the quotation tie because he's in the he's in the same garb he wore to the wedding.
Did we last episode talk about Lowell's tie?
No. That, tell me about it because that was an interesting tie.
So Lowell's wearing like a brown blazer. He's got like a plaid button up undershirt or plaid button up shirt, but then he's got this like red tie with these kind of like triangles that are sort of like askew.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like different levels of like the lines. It's almost like a Microsoft Word menu where it's like, how solid do you want the rectangle around your text?
Yes.
Oh man. He looks great.
Yeah. Lowell looks good when he dresses up. He always looks good, but when he dresses up.
Yeah. And that, he's got that haircut now.
Mm-hmm. Sharp dressed man.
Oh yeah, yeah. That fisherman's gonna be a lucky guy when he gets to go on that coffee date.
And Brian's second tie is maroon, and it looked like it had upside down white rabbit ears around bluish, silverish circles. That's how
it's new, right?
That's a new one. Yeah, it's new to me.
Yeah, yeah. Because the first tie is the quote smart. The second one I wrote down red background, kind of like it looks like a white starfish under a lilac circles.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, starfish.
It looked like there was like a red background and then somebody had like starfish stamp and they put that and then over that they put like just like a circle stamp.
Yes. Yeah.
I wonder if they were like just kind of inventing ties, doing kind of like basic, because they look like when I was in elementary school and we would cut potatoes into shapes.
Oh yeah.
And you would, like, dip the potato into the paint and then use that as, like, the stamp.
Oh, for real? That, it did look like that. And a lot of his ties have a maroon base. So I think they just decided that a maroon tie worked for him, too.
Yeah, he's got, like, actually, I feel like Brian, Lowell, and Roy all kind of, like, run in the maroon range.
Yeah. And then
I feel like Joe goes darker. Joe gets like kind of more dark blue sort of things.
Mm-hmm. More conservative, solid colors. And then the third tie of that episode is the return of the Wisconsin tie.
Love that tie. Yeah. I wrote down my notes when I was watching this last night. Third tie is the Wisconsin tie. Mm-hmm. The tie that I would be the happiest to own from the show.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Like if we're looking back at the show so far, I think the prop that I would, or the proper set costume piece I would be like the most stoked to own would be that Wisconsin tie.
I have to agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
And some of Brian's shoes too. I love Brian's footwear.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We probably should highlight that another time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we talked about Brian's shoes very much, but
he's got sneakers often.
Mm-hmm.
So Antonio's in the bathroom trying to serve up a meal.
Mm-hmm.
He reveals that he's unpacking. He breaks it to Helen that he has to move in because the federales expect them to live together.
And it's like this whole episode is just like, I love seeing Helen's reactions to like what's happening to her.
Yeah,
as she like kind of like accepts that she has to like. That this is her life now.
Yeah, and I want to remind Helen, she signed up for this. She's the one who interjected and threw herself in there, you know? And
right.
Antonio never asked her this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we're supposed to think that she didn't realize that it could involve, like, jail time, you know?
Yes, yeah. And
I don't think she, like, realized what she was signing up for.
Yeah, but they definitely should have... had this conversation before they read the vows. Like, how exactly is this going to work, you know?
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whereas Antonio's just kind of like taking liberties, walking into her bathroom, taking it as a given that it's fine. He'll just move in with her.
Could you imagine this scene playing out, but instead of Helen in the bathtub, in the bubble bath, it's Sconset Sal in an oil barrel?
Yeah.
She's just... up to her titties in the oil barrel. Well, come on in here, Italian boy. What you got? What you eating there? Veal, veal scampanelli? All right.
Yeah, I think she would have been a lot more cool with it, like having a new roommate than Helen
I know.
Is.
Yeah, yeah. I think she'd like be par for the course. She would, I don't know.
Antonio tries to assuage her doubts and fears, you know. Yes. I'll be like a shadow. When you wake up, I will have already left for the day. You say, yeah. What was that? The wind? And I will whisper, no, it was me, Antonio. But you won't even hear me because I'll be gone.
Yes, that line made me laugh so much.
Yeah,
that whole interaction.
And he delivers it with like the greatest little plucky look on his face.
And then Helen lays down the rules. All right, you're giving it no choice, but so fine, here's the rules. You sleep on the downstairs couch, you're second in line for the bathroom, you don't even sneeze unless you check with me first.
I won't look at you, talk to you, or touch you. It will be like we're married 10 years.
Yes. And then as he goes to leave, Brian comes in. I don't think I caught it the first time I watched it, but I was like, oh, this is all happening basically after the wedding.
Correct.
This is the same night as the wedding. I love that after the wedding, Brian was like, all right, let's go get drunk at a bar.
Uh-huh.
And Brian immediately comes in. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
I just love Helen's scream. She does. Mm-hmm. Crystal Bernard does the best little screams. She screams and Brian just, whoa, jackpot. I like that.
Yes. And I love that Brian also, yeah, like Brian comes in and then Antonio, this is an outrage. Don't you know it's very rude to barge into a woman's bathroom unannounced? It is unthinkable. And then Brian, is that veal scallopini? Yes, with just a hint of peace.
And he sits down, grabs the food, tucks a little hanky into his shirt and just starts eating.
Yep. And yeah, like Brian, like Helen's screaming at them to get out of there. And then Brian says, okay, but you won't hear the good news or the bad news. He announces that like he was spent an hour talking to a lawyer and found out that there is a visa lottery that basically allows them to apply for a visa, and there's like, I guess 40,000 visas available, and if Antonio's name is chosen at random, then you know, he can secure himself a visa that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
yep,
I love Antonio's line, if this is that thing with Ed McMahon, I may have already won. That was maybe the hardest I laughed the whole episode.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good.
And that's saying something, because I actually, like, there were a few moments that really made me laugh.
I actually laughed harder at the next moment that comes right on the heels of that. When Lowell comes in now.
Yes.
Because he's tired of sitting in the car. And he, yes. And he bristles because Antonio at this point is sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, Antonio, I caught you on the hopper.
Yeah.
And he honestly, Lowell averts his eyes.
The other thing about Lowell's entrance that I love is the way Helen resignedly waves. He goes like he goes, hi Helen, and Helen just like in the bathtub like shrieking down just kind of waves at him.
Yes.
And I'd honestly, I'll just spoiler alert it, I think that's why Helen gets my VIP. I think that like throughout the episode she's great, but like that moment made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, great reactions, great faces. Yeah.
Yep. Like it's just like she waves, she like kind of just this like little dismissive wave, like, well, this is my fucking life.
Yeah.
Just men coming into my fucking bathroom.
A stream of men coming into my bathroom. Yep. So then we move on to the terminal. It's like a couple days later or something. They have a whole operation going. A bunch of people, including people I've never seen before, stuffing envelopes to enter the lottery, hoping to win.
Including the redhead, the Aramis redhead.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And some other random guy sitting at the desk there, the table there too.
Back to the last episode, our last scene. I also want to say that when Lowell delivers that line that you love, caught you on the hopper, I'm pretty sure that both that both Steven Weber and Tony Shalhoub are like trying to hide their laughter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Helen's like more straight faced, but I think she might be as well. But like for sure, like I'm pretty sure that like Steven Weber is kind of doing some like busy work to kind of cover up the fact that he's definitely just fucking he's laughing.
Yeah, there's another moment later on where I think Steven Weber almost broke as well.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a contrived and kind of implausible but fun scene where they just keep piling on.
Yes.
And I like when Wings does that.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, like as your favorite moment when the series of falls.
Yes. Yeah.
It's one of the best moments in primetime television.
Indubitably.
Nothing like this since Geraldo opened up that vault.
And Lowell had a great line when they're stuffing envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they had a drawing on the Popo the Clown show, they let a monkey draw the winning ticket.
Yes.
So take it from a three-time winner. Rubbing a banana on these entries is not wasted time.
Which is what I was referencing earlier.
And I love that it's a callback to Popo the Clown, too.
Yes. Yeah, Popo the Clown.
Yeah.
The best.
And so Helen enters with like 2,000 more entries, but she expects 8,000 more.
Yep, she's pushing them to ship out 10,000. She is going to make sure that his name gets chosen.
Yeah. Yeah, because she says that winning the lottery is the last chance to get out of this marriage. Boy, you forget to put the toilet seat down one time.
Yes, yes, yes. Silly line. And then a woman with 31, 20, 20, it's rude to even try to guess.
She had them ack.
We got aerobics lady showing up, and so it's Rachel who's coming in to meet up with, you know, Joe Hackett.
And she's like initially disappointed because she reveals that she was hoping it was the guy that hit her car, and Joe ain't him.
Right. She says, gosh, you're not what I expected. Well, you're a lot more than I expected, so I guess it kind of evens out. Which is also what I was referencing earlier when we were talking about something. Yeah. And so, yeah, she says, I came here looking for the guy who ran into my car. A couple of months ago, this guy puts a dent in my fender, so I wrote my name and number on the back of this club car matchbook, and the jerk never calls me back. But then how'd the matchbook get into my jacket? And we all know.
Cue Brian walking in.
Yeah, I don't know, but you're definitely not the guy who hit my car. And then, yeah, Brian, well, this must be the lovely, that's the guy. Whoa, got her.
Brian, you borrowed my jacket.
Yeah, and crashed his car, maybe?
Yes, yeah. And we know he's, like, borrowed his car and gotten tickets before, too.
Yes. I also love, like, what's the big idea? The number you gave me was for some lousy bakery. Hey, that happens to be a damn good bakery.
So good, I have its number memorized.
I lost your number, and after a while, I just forgot all about it. Let me refresh your memory. And she does like a whole like stance.
Yeah.
You owe me $338. And then he's like, oh, look, there must be some way I can work this off. You know, I happen to be an expert at shiatsu massage.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, she just glares at him.
Yeah. So he runs off to cut her a check.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe's kind of flirting with Rachel.
Oh, yeah.
He invites her to something like lunch.
And then she says, like, is it anything like dinner? Because I'm free later.
Yeah.
And then he goes, like, well, if you're into hit and runs, you know, we could do a one-night stand. Yeah. And then Brian, yeah, I love the button. Like, yes, so they agree to a date. Brian comes back in, hands her the check. She goes, see you tonight, Joe. And he goes, well, just one second. And then he like grabs the check, tears it in half, and goes, all right, Brian, now write her one from your account.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Then we cut to scene 5, which is the terminal later on.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio is trying to get through on the phone to call immigration to see if he won the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, you know what? I bet this is why this is not streaming. Because every time he calls the immigration line and they put him on hold, you can clearly hear the immigration song from Led Zeppelin playing.
Wouldn't that be great if that was immigration hold music?
Yes. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, Faye had a good joke. I can't quite remember something about...
Yeah, like immigration lines are still busy. And then Helen goes, well, try again, Antonio. I have to know. Now, Helen, you waited a week already. Be patient. I think Faye says, yelling at Antonio is going to make the call go through any quicker. And then, but he's like, in the meantime, he's calling again. It's ringing. It's ringing. Yeah. Well, it's still good advice. Yes.
And then Helen's all like, please, 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 please. And Roy goes, you can say please for hours. It won't do you any good.
Another page from the Roy Biggins dating manual. That might be like my truly hardest laugh of the whole episode.
Yeah. And seeing Roy's face.
Yeah. Because the first time I watched that, I like rewound it to hear it again. I thought it was so fucking funny. Oh, man. And then Antonio is disappointed when he gets off the phone and, you know, he comes over and he consoles Helen. At least we still have each other, you know, like whatever. They're like being, you know, he's trying to console her or whatever. And then I think does Helen say, I mean, it's only 3 years. That's not so terrible. Three years isn't a lifetime. And then lol. It is if you're a horseshoe crab. I take it back. I think that was the hardest I laughed the whole episode. Yeah.
Am I the only one that watches PBS?
Which, by the way, like that's an indication of how much I laughed at this episode because I keep on remembering lines that made me laugh harder. I loved.
Yeah, there's really good joke writing, which was a bit of a salvo for like the absence of Sconce at Sal.
Mm-hmm.
But then the phone rings again, and Helen answers it, and they're trying to get a hold of Antonio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets some sort of news because she hangs up and angrily says, "I'm gonna go kill my husband."
Mm-hmm.
Not unlike the violin spider, kills her mate and then lays her eggs in his nutrient-rich carcass. I just know to happen. I just happen to know that one.
The rules of two.
But that's another moment where Brian nearly broke because there was like a long silence after Lowell said that.
Oh man!
And you could see Brian's
that.
Like lips curling up, like he really wanted to laugh.
Oh yeah, I think I noticed that actually. Yeah. Love that. All right, 16. Sixth scene, we're in Antonio's taxi.
Oh, a sex scene. All right.
Sex scene.
Taxi cab confessions.
Yeah, and just like the previous sex scene, Brian pops up from the back seat. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, so, Helen hops into Antonio's cab, pissed off.
Yes.
Angry. Why did you lie?
I wrote, Helen confronts Antonio about him lying about the visa. And I wrote, Antonio is Jared's old roommate, hoping his fake marriage will lead to real feelings.
Yes. Yeah.
Can I say that?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay. Because you mentioned that with like your old roommate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he going to be mad that you talked about that?
I really don't care.
All right, cool. Fair enough.
We're not friends anymore.
Okay, fair enough. Are you guys enemies?
No, we haven't talked in years. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't even know what happened with that marriage.
I love the details. And she says, look, I want you, your hairnet, your gravity boots, and your Hooked on Phonics tapes out of my house.
Yeah, what's the story with those gravity boots?
Do you remember those? Like those, they were like a thing in the early 90s where you would like hook yourself up in the the door jamb.
And with like Batman.
And you would do like upside down sit-ups and stuff.
Yeah, but why does I guess why does Antonio have them?
I don't know. I think it's just like a detail.
Yeah, it's great though. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then here's that heartwarming story. Mm-hmm. You know, Antonio tells a story of his parents, Angelo and Anna Maria. They basically had like an arranged marriage, mm-hmm. but they grew to love each other. And Antonio was kind of fantasizing that that could be the story of Helen and Antonio.
Right.
They did grow to love each other. It can happen.
Yes.
So Helen's we missed a good joke though, you know, there as well. But prior when Helen was still angry.
Yeah.
Antonio was like happy, saying he's happy to be married. Like coming to home to a warm house and a friendly face. Well, yeah. Not that face.
Yes. Yeah, I love that that line too.
Because Helen has the most gnarly look on her face in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, great actress. She like can really make a face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Helen explains that she wants the marriage to be for real. And she kind of lets Antonio off kindly.
I love seeing Helen grounded. I think part of why I like this episode so much, spoiler alert, is that mm-hmm. We've come a long way from the beginning of season 3 where Helen is like a jealous, but like an undeservedly jealous, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Like where she's like being weird, like driving her Jeep through Joe's office because despite the fact that she like didn't call him for a year, she still thinks that somehow they're like in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's being like kind of like the sort of grounded, sane person. And I love seeing that.
Yeah.
I hope that that's kind of where this character lands.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did Antonio say? He says something to the effect of how he'll never find a woman. Like she lets him know, oh, you'll find your true love. And he said, but I'll never find a woman as beautiful.
Yeah. She's like, oh, sure you will. I guess. No, trust me on this one. History is not in my favor. You are the first Scarpacci woman to have more hair above her nose than below.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, she reminds him, like, it's still a great day. You can stay in the country, whatever.
Oh, Helen, there's no woman I would rather have as my ex-wife.
And then he tries to ask her out.
Hey, we are both single now. Would you like to go out sometime?
And she gives a look. Too soon.
And I did like, yeah, and I liked her line. Let's go get some expensive champagne and a cheap lawyer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Woo! We made it through.
Yeah, and then I'm guessing they'll never bring up this marriage again.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. I bet it gets like a throwaway joke or something. Where it's you know, like he's like referred to as an ex-husband or something like that. Like the same way like the last episode, Joe gets to make a joke at his own expense, more or less, where he mm-hmm. talks about how Antonio makes all of her exes pale in comparison, but then I'm her ex.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, my final thoughts, by the way. So funny app. I wrote there were some rules of two. Like I think Lowell with his final animal facts feels like a rule of two. Like I would have loved to see that, but I still loved that. That was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The first like plot A is Helen and Antonio's wedding woes, and plot B is Joe and Rachel, I guess.
Yeah, and we don't see it. That doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah. I wrote in these like kind of final thoughts. Really fun background work during the wedding, like the big man in flannel dancing with himself. The same dude that catches the bouquet later.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote like another rule of two, like we see the garter and the bouquet. It would have been nice to see like there'd be like kind of three wedding beats, maybe like with the cake.
Yeah.
Or a toast, but
yeah.
And
I got to know if Lowell ever got his blue gas cap back too.
Oh, right. I wrote that the episode moves. Like I like this episode never got boring for me.
Agreed, yeah.
Like I feel like some episodes kind of do. Like when I rewatch them, I'm like, oh, this part. But there's nothing in this episode that did that for me.
Mm-hmm.
I also wrote they're humanizing Antonio a lot, so he can be a continuing character. Did you catch that?
Oh, that's a great point.
And I wrote maybe that's what Thomas Hayden Church struggled with, finding ways to humanize Lowell more. And I wonder, like, because like Lowell really shines in this episode. And like Lowell's probably my number two for VIP because I think he's mm-hmm. just so funny. But like I wonder if like that was if they had trouble with that, like trying to get kind of give Lowell that same like very human moment, like in the taxi cab. I don't think his character works in that way.
No, I think they've taken him too far outfield, you know. Even when he was having his struggles, like, you know, up at the top of the lighthouse, there was no like pathos to that, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like that might be why he eventually leaves. I mean, he also was like the lead of a new sitcom, right? Ned and Stacy.
Oh, correct. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what he went on to do. So that also might be just like he just got a better role. Okay. Oh, and VIP?
VIP, I'll agree with you with Helen.
Yeah. Helen gets my number one. I think that like Tony Shalhoub probably deserves number two, but I want to give Lowell my number two because we don't really do number two anyway, but
yeah. Well,
but like, I really thought Lowell had some of the funniest lines this whole episode.
Yeah. We took a break from recording earlier and I did a number two.
That's true. So I think, your toilet gets a number two. Cool. Yeah. So as far as stripes, I'm going 4 stripes. I'm easy peasy.
Excellent. I'm actually going to go 3 stripes only because this is bundled together in my brain with the prior episode, which I just missed Sconset Sal too much this episode. So there's some of I think the joke writing really shined on this episode, but you know, without keeping Sconset Sal in the mix and in the story, I just felt her absence too much.
Also, like, I'm sticking with the 4 stripes, but I also like don't, you know, maybe I'll go down to 3.75. But
I like you at 4. I want you to go with your gut, you know.
Well, here's my why I might bump it down to 3.5 or 3.75 is because we don't really get like a wrap up from like the INS agent.
Oh yeah.
He's like the initial threat. He's the kind of like the looming threat, and then at the end they're just in a taxi cab being like, let's get a cheap lawyer and expensive champagne, but like, there's no real wrap up.
Yeah.
But I still like, I enjoyed the episode from beginning to end a lot. So I'll stick with my 4. Fuck it.
and here's my question, you know, if we're going to split hairs, a marriage isn't like you have the ceremony and now you're legally married. You're not really legally married till you filed the paperwork and all that. And I'm guessing like, did they ever do that filing and stuff? They may not even need a lawyer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. They didn't consummate their wedding. No. Or I guess we didn't watch after Lowell left, you know, because they might have consummated it then. Oh, I fucking forgot. I have an IMDb review.
Oh, I want to hear it.
This is 8 out of 10. The title of it is Soapy Sexiness. It was written by IMDb user Horny for Blondes at AOL.com. In February of 2024.
Wow.
And they write, when the little Italian man came into the bathroom, the blonde girl was in the bath under the bubbles. She is naked, but we don't get to see her naked body. But fortunately, I have a brain that has seen many naked women before, both in person and in glossy photographs and also on my Dell computer. So I was able to fill in some of the gaps with my high IQ. And in parentheses, last time I tested my IQ, it was a perfect 100. That's pretty good, right? Maybe? I don't know. Maybe not. Mm-hmm. At one point, the blonde girl puts her foot out of the water, and that is when I paused the video so I could try to get a closer look. I like feet. I give this episode 8 stars out from 10 stars because I know that the TV police have rules about what skin can be shown, but still, I wish they could have shown Helen come out of the bubbles for even just 30 seconds, and Italian Man and Brian and Lowell can all look at her along with me, and then maybe we can all share a look like, boy, oh boy, what did we see? I had been to strip clubs 3 times in my life, both times in Tijuana. So yeah, that person gives it 8 out of 10, which is kind of close.
Right.
I feel like that's close to what I'm giving it. I'm sticking with the perfect 4, but you know, I was kind of wavering between 3.5 and 4. So.
Oh.
And if you have any thoughts about that review, horny is HORNY number 4 BLONDZ at AOL.com. So yeah, if you have any thoughts about that, go ahead and email them at that website, at that email address.
Maybe you're a blonde. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a user out there that's probably horny for you. So yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, damn, we did it. We talked about this wrap up to a 2-part episode arc. We talked about this episode of Wings front to back, top to bottom. And next time we shall return to talk about the 14th episode of season 3. Yeah, the 14th episode of season 3, entitled Stew in a Stew.
Stew in a Stew. All right, looking forward to that.
Thank you, Emerson, for talking Wings this week with me.
Jared, thank you for talking Wings with me as well.